geeks and cinemaniacs. From the heart of Hollyweird, California, at the epicenter of all things eerie and awesome, it's time for Charles Band's Full Moon Freak Show.
This week, it's my pleasure to bring our first real-deal rock star to the show. The fact that he's also one of the most singular horror film directors working today makes him that much more fascinating. Of course, I'm talking about Rob Zombie, the horror movie fan turned heavy metal god turned filmmaker who has given the world such cult classics as The Devil's Rejects, The Lords of Salem, the lean and mean remake of John Carpenter's Halloween, and most recently, his psychedelic remount of the 60s TV staple The Munsters. He never stops touring, he never stops creating, and he never stops being true to his signature artistic style. Welcome to the Freak Show, Rob. What a fucking
career.
That's
a nice intro. I like it. Jesus. I can go with that. That's right. I like psychedelic monsters. That's what it is, yeah.
Really? I think so.
It kind of is, yeah.
So, I'm probably not the most qualified to interview you, and that's why I don't consider this an interview. None of these are. We're just going to talk about shit.
Because... Not the most qualified to answer it either.
Because I've been in my bubble, I make my movies, and of course I've seen your movies, you know, and I think they're terrific. They're really creepy. I don't really make movies as creepy as your movies. Mine are more like puppets and dolls, right, and little fantasy characters. Yours are like really, but yeah, really, really well done. Thanks. But I'm not too familiar with the music. So just, I want to say that in advance because I want to hear about it because it's an amazing world.
Sure,
and you're on your way to a concert, right?
Yeah. That's why I just happen to be here.
That is such good timing. Yeah, but let's rewind. We got to at least start somewhere. So the fact that you were raised by folks who were in the carnival business, the carny people, to me is freaking fascinating.
It's become more fascinating over time. When I was a kid, I thought it was a drag. Personally,
now why isn't? Weren't there like weird things and hot chicks and?
But we were like kids, so it just, well, it was like I said. For anyone who wants to know what it's really like, that movie Carney, with Gary Busey and Meg Foster, Jodie Foster, is completely accurate.
Okay,
it's not. It's when I got involved, like when I went back in time and looked at like my grandparents, it was more like circus, like they were in circus outfits and it was all big and.
Right,
sort of like low budget Ringling Brothers, but still like circusy. By the time in the 70s, it was the early 70s when my parents would drag me along, it was totally just like dirty and.
But games and shooting and all that.
Yeah,
kind
like
of stuff.
Games and shooting. It was all kind of like a lot of the characters I've created in my movies are based on people I remember from back then because all the guys running the Tilt-A-Whirl and the Ferris Wheel were just a bunch of maniacs.
Right, no.
You know, and you get on those things, you're like, is this his little pin is the only thing holding this seat in place now that I'm 65 feet in the air?
Oh my God.
And that guy down there who seems like he's like gacked out of his mind, is the guy running this thing?
Did you ever see a series some years ago, Carnival?
I did. I remember it because I remember Bill Moseley was on it. Yeah, he was telling me about it, but I didn't. I might have seen an episode, but
it was, I think, really well done. What's fascinating to me, of course, I'm more into what was happening a couple centuries ago, where, well, even in the late 1800s, you had the tattooed dude and the mentalist and the fat lady who wasn't really that fat.
the fat lady now known as your average American. I think we do that all the time. Where it's like that guy would be in a circus.
Oh yeah, I hate to say it, but that is true. So
it's weird.
But still, I'm a huge fan of all that and especially magicians back in the turn of the last century, and I always say to people that if this was 130 years ago, that's what I'd be doing because, Full Moon is just another circus act. I'd be like the guy making sure we could pay the people, but I'd be totally into the dwarf and the thing, all the crazy shit. But that's not quite what it was for you, right? You didn't have all the weird.
By that, there was not like freak shows. Freak shows still as a kid because I remember when we were really little, which is really funny now because no one ever does, but there was this place called the Topsfield Fair. And as a school field trip, we would go there and they had like freak shows. And I'm like, this seems like a funny thing now to bring second graders to because now it'd be everything about it would be
wrong,
culturally inappropriate. But that's, we loved it. But no, the thing I remember mostly, and I kind of reference them sometimes in my movies, is there was stuff like the girl the girl in the bikini that morphed into a gorilla. Right. Like they do that mirror trick, and then a guy in a gorilla suit would run around the tent. And
but isn't that listen? But that was not your childhood.
No, that one was. Well, how cool childhood. Is that? Well, my favorite thing with a lot of the carnivals I got stuck working at was the haunted house, because we could just it was like you know that Tobey Hooper movie Funhouse. We could just stay in it all day.
Go through
it 1,000 times, hide in it, and because it was just my parents, my grandparents, and. All my cousins, because it was all family stuff for the most part.
I love that though. I mean, there had to be moments. But looking back,
it was like half.
But what was your age? Because a lot depends on you know, how old were you when you were actually in that.
I think,
you know, behind the scenes there.
So I think the last time that we did it was 1977. So I would have been 12.
Okay, well, that's a good age.
Yeah,
I mean, that's an age where you're almost getting kind of horny. I mean, wasn't there any hot chicks or topless girls or none of that? It was more just.
I don't remember it that way at all. It's good to.
Well, I have a romantic. See, I did. I was not raised in a carny environment. So to me, it's all what I read and what I think about what it would have been like.
And maybe it was, but maybe it just you know. All I remember is like my parents ran a food concession and they had candy apples. Right. That was one of the things, popcorn, candy apples. Right. What I remember, they've healed now, but you know, you put the apple on the stick in the thing in the candy, and you go like that, but it's boiling hot, and you go like that, and what would always happen is when I would take one to hand someone, it would drip on my hands, so my hands were all had little burns on them when I was a kid from the
these memories hot are candy. Not fun.
I had a huge burn here, but it actually over the last 40 years it went away.
But
it always weird little burns all over my
no
hands.
No anecdotes, nothing other than you're not into it. You got the burn. All right, but then you're a horror movie fan, right? As a young kid.
Yeah. For sure.
So how did that all erupt?
I guess I just started, you know, I mean, there was in the late 60s when I was the perfect age, like 4 or 5, it was everywhere, you know, whether it was like the Munsters or the Addams Family or Twilight Zone or Outer Limits or creepy, eerie, famous monsters. It just seemed like it was everywhere. And and that was it. I mean, it was just Creature Double Feature on Saturday afternoon and all that. I mean, it was
pretty much TV, or did you also go to the theater at all?
Pretty much TV. I mean, we started going to the movies. I think the first time I ever saw a movie in the theater was Willy Wonka.
Oh, really?
Yeah, whatever year that was. Was that 1970?
I don't know.
Early 70s. I mean, I remember thinking, is this real? I wasn't sure. Like, I was confused. And then when I saw Young Frankenstein in the theater, that sealed the deal for movies.
Great. Did you get that humor even back then? Because you were still young. That was like a teenager.
Probably 50-50.
Right. None of these movies, Blazing Saddles, you could never make this movie today. I mean, that's just totally.
That was the first R-rated movie I ever saw. My parents just took me and my little brother to see it.
Like, which one thought, Young Frankenstein?
No, Blazing Saddles.
Oh, Blazing
Saddles. No one thought anything of anything.
Yeah, well.
My parents weren't really like that content crazy.
They
pretty much
cool.
Let us watch anything.
They were cool that they took you. Well,
it was like they were pretty normal and regular, and they weren't trying to be cool. They just weren't thinking about it, I guess. And sometimes I'd be like, this seems highly inappropriate for us, but I'm not saying anything. Let's just go.
Well, okay.
The most inappropriate was when they took me and my brother to see Clockwork Orange. And I think on that one they were sitting behind us thinking like,
not a good idea.
Maybe this one crossed the line.
Well, such a freaking great movie, too. I'm older than you, so I saw it. I was, I don't know, in my 20s. And I can only imagine as a kid, it's a rough movie. So it's so fucking well done.
I know. It's like, the genius of it sort of smooths out some of the roughness, I guess. But
well, for sure, that's Kubrick. So the horror movie thing, and then how did it all begin with music? How did that happen? And again, I ask this not like, how did it begin? Like, I don't fucking know. I'm not in your world. So I mean, how did that actually happen?
Everything happens without any kind of plan. Like sometimes, you know, it's like, and I'm sure everyone has the same story. I moved to New York to go to college for fine arts. And then after about a year and a half, I realized I hate school, but I like running around New York like a maniac.
That's
so good. then I started on my, you know, my career as a bike messenger because, you know, I looked like a weirdo and I couldn't get any.
That's how you supported yourself?
Yeah.
So what was that? A bike? I mean, you were
you literally just have to deliver packages on your bicycle because the traffic is so bad that you can go between the cars. So you're actually sometimes like you can get from 42nd Street to Wall Street faster than a car on a bike.
Right.
which, but it's a horrible job. I mean, yeah. It's an absolutely horrible job.
Well, now you got similar people delivering, I don't know, Postmates.
And yeah, food. I mean, and I got hit by a car twice.
Oh, shit.
And I never broke anything. I got that hurt. But, you know, people just throw their doors open. You're just like, bam, right into the door. So, they, you know, your time is always numbered because without saying too much about bike messaging, but I could always tell because whoever was the dispatcher to hand out the jobs was always the guy with a broken leg. So once you got hurt, you became the dispatcher because you couldn't ride your bike anymore. So I did that for a while. Mm-hmm. But then that morphed into me getting a job at this place called Broadcast Arts, and they did Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh, right.
The first season. First season was in New York in this little loft.
So you worked for Rubens, basically.
Well, yeah, as a PA, so he didn't even know awesome. I was there. I don't know, the most important thing I ever did. The only time I talked to him, he asked me where the bathroom was, and I was like, he's right over there. That was the longest conversation.
That was it?
Yeah. I didn't talk to anybody. Nobody cares about the PAs. I'm not saying I feel that way, but I definitely felt that he felt that way.
There are people, there are PAs. I mean, Eli Roth
great.
Was just in here, and he has some great stories starting off basically doing that stuff.
Yeah, I think his stories are probably better than mine. My Pee-wee stories aren't that exciting.
Okay, so skipping Pee-wee, but then how
it was fun to be there and to see it all. But
I can imagine. But okay, the music thing, how did that begin? Because that really started your whole
Yeah,
career.
I mean, I was a super, I wasn't, there's no music background in my family whatsoever. I just liked music. I always loved rock music, and then I liked punk rock. And I'm living in New York, going to CBGB's when it was still totally vibrant. And I would see all these bands, and I'd go, these bands suck. I mean, I could suck as bad as these bands. So why don't I just start a band? So I started a band, and just it was pathetic forever. I wouldn't even tell anybody I was in a band. Because,
was it White Zombie?
Yeah, it was White Zombie.
Wow.
But, I don't like talking about things I'm doing, really, because if you don't know about it, it kind of means like it's meaningless. Someone might tell you about my band, but you don't give a shit. Like back then. So it did that for a while. And it was after about 7 years, it slowly started creeping up till that's when we got signed to Geffen Records. And
isn't
it became
cool.
Like a real thing.
Wow.
But I think I always tell people, right where you feel that the moment that you've ruined your life is right as maybe you're getting to the point where it's going to happen. You have to feel like you've destroyed your entire life.
Keep that in mind,
life.
Everyone, because a lot of the people who are watching this are aspiring filmmakers, writers,
musicians.
I know,
everyone's like, I'm going to give it 2 years and then I'm going to give up. Well, just give up now and find something else to do with those 2 years.
I agree with that. Oh, yeah. You got to get in it. You got to get in. I tell people, just fucking work for free on a movie set. Just get in there.
You have to do it because you love it. There may never be any money.
No.
I mean, this seems to be all or nothing as far as money
goes.
Pretty
much
so.
Pretty much so. But then for people who don't know, the name of the band White Zombie is from the Bela Lugosi film, which you were a fan of, right?
Oh, yeah. I love that movie. And way before I ever had a band, I would see that and go, that would be a great band name. It sounds like Black Sabbath or Deep Purple. It has this classic vibe.
It's perfect.
And if I ever have a band, that's what I'm going to call it.
That is awesome.
So that was always packed.
So here's a question that I thought of even before I knew we were doing this, because sometimes, I don't know, we have friends in common. Bill Moseley and I were together recently. Sid Haig, poor guy, gone. But anyway, I'm thinking, I know you changed your name, right?
Yeah.
Now, how did that work? I mean, did you go in front of some bureaucrat and say, hey, listen, this is my real name. I want to become Rob Zombie. Didn't someone go, what the fuck? Rob Zombie, that's your name?
Maybe if it wasn't in California, they might go, what? But like here, I don't think anyone cares. And it was just became like, that became like what everyone was calling me anyway.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then, I mean, I changed it. Maybe 30 years ago almost. So
right.
It's been a long time.
But didn't you have to, I mean, I've never
You just have to go fill out some paperwork.
But you don't have to talk to someone?
I had to talk to somebody for like 2 seconds. And I go, okay, stamp, done.
That was it.
Go get
no
a new passport,
ceremony,
kid.
No reaction.
Oh, no.
So that's your name. So you go to Europe or whatever and Rob Zombie.
Oh, yeah, that's
passport.
On all my
hilarious.
ID, yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
So the best is whenever you take out your credit card and someone goes, are you Rob Zombie? Because they're reading the credit card. No, I stole his credit card. Do you get that many credit cards through here? That
well,
on
come
it?
On, you're asking for it. For people who,
oh,
even
I know.
People who don't know you and don't recognize you, a credit card that says Rob Zombie is kind of unique, right?
Yeah, it's weird.
I get it sometimes. My name is Charlie Band. People wonder, what band are you with? I think it's some made-up silly name. So 7 years and then Geffen, and that's when you finally had some dough? I mean, when you felt
No, I still didn't have any dough. I mean, that's the misconception. We signed to Geffen Records. With, like, they don't give you any money. You're just signed to Geffen Records.
Okay.
You get to make a record. And then we signed, I would say, probably the world's worst publishing deal of all time.
Okay.
So we got a check for $20,000.
Right.
to split between the four band members. So I had $5,000, which was by far the most money I'd ever seen in my life. Right, so it was like, and I lived off that $5,000 for the next 3 years, basically.
But you still, are you still biking? Or are you just
touring? Oh, no, now we're just touring, but still not really making any money because nobody still gives a crap about the band. Mm. But you're kind of, you know, I mean, I didn't even have a place I lived. We just toured.
Wow.
For like 2.5 solid years.
Unbelievable.
And when we would come back to what we thought was our home, which was California, we stayed in a hotel. Like, actually, we stayed in a hotel by Man's Chinese, but they've eliminated the street now. Remember, there was another street
there? Yes, I do remember.
And there was a really crappy hotel on that street, and that's where we lived.
They're all crappy in that area.
Yeah, that's right.
They're all bad.
The really nice hotel on Hollywood Boulevard.
Okay, so, wow, that's a lot of touring. But then, okay, so you signed, but then I'm always curious because I've had in my bizarre career great ups and terrible downs.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been broke. I never went bankrupt, but really close to being bankrupt. And then money, and money's awesome, and then money goes away.
Yeah.
But I do remember when things got good for me many years ago, and then, of course, they got bad. And it was like, wow, I got some dough in the bank. You know, and I didn't have anything. I wasn't into any, like, frivolous. I didn't go blow it. I didn't have, like,
me neither.
You know, I never did really drugs. I'm not just, I don't know. I just didn't have, I never, I mean, I'm one of the few guys in the 80s who didn't do coke or any of that shit. It was just not my thing at all.
But the
I'm just
one
saying,
guy in the 80s.
The one guy. Well, in the 60s, I mean, growing up in Italy, I grew up in Italy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was all LSD and hash, weed.
Yeah.
Never touched it. I thought, this is, I'm weird enough. I don't want to, like, fuck my brain up.
No, I feel the same way. I never got messed up on that stuff either because I was like, from the first penny I made, I would keep it. Because
right,
once you know what it's like to have no money, you're like, I ain't going back there, no matter what, because that sucks.
That sucks.
So I never had any downs financially because I was always,
good
I never bought anything,
you.
I never
good
did anything.
You.
I was always like, I am
beautiful.
Not going to be broke again.
Well, my craft has always been making these weird movies.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I was a painter like my grandfather, you know, you invest in a canvas, you can, but
yeah.
Movies can fuck you up too, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It takes
sure.
two or three in the wrong deal and the guy doesn't pay you. Next thing you know, you have no money. And you're kiting checks and trying to make payroll. So I've had that up and down forever. And ironically, as weird as the business is now, we talked about this earlier, because it's all digital and subscription. It's no longer tied really to the movie, you know, unless you're Spielberg. It's still a good business if you're Spielberg.
Oh, I'm sure.
And you're out there in the theaters. But the whole notion of well, I don't want to get into the negative side of all this. But.
No, I mean, really, but like the whole reason what I loved about movies, it's all gone in a certain way. Like because I really was, I loved mainstream movies like Spielberg, Close Encounters, Jaws, whatever. But I loved that. I loved the drive-in, and I loved the second run places.
Right,
that was,
right. Like, that's where all
She-Wolf
my movies
for the
went.
SS or Faster
right.
Pussycat. Those are the movies
right.
I really obsessed with, and it's just all gone. You know,
it is.
That's just that vibe of like. Well, I lived on 42nd Street in New York. Everything, I would just go to 42nd
Street.
That was
the 90s or?
The 80s.
The 80s.
I didn't actually live there. I lived downtown. But, I mean, I lived in the theaters. I'm just going to see Make Them Die Slowly or Cannibal Holocaust or whatever crazy thing was coming through. And actually, being in the theater seemed more dangerous than the movies.
Oh, for
most
sure.
Of the time.
And similar, not so similar because I was in New York occasionally. And once in a while, I went to one of those movies. It was weird. Especially the 70s were kind of rough in New York. But here, when I was a kid, I'd see movies, and I've told this story before, on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
And there were like, you know, Dolomite and all these bizarro films. And they were the most fun experiences ever because the audience was awesome. It was generally predominantly a black or brown audience. They were yelling at the screen.
Oh,
I mean,
insanity.
And then I saw a few of these movies recently for other reasons, and they were fun. I thought, oh, but I miss those people. Goddamn, fuck you, bitch. Get, you know, all that crazy inner.
Well,
you don't
get
that anymore.
No,
you know?
You don't. I mean, 42nd Street was like where the prostitutes would go
right.
to turn tricks. Guys would literally be a giant boomboxes playing at full volume through the whole movie. Every single time I went to 42nd
Street. That I've not experienced.
Every single time I went to 42nd Street, I saw a horrible fight that ended
badly.
And one time I remember me and my friend went to see something and we were stopping off at McDonald's to get something. And I was like, we went to 42nd Street and nothing happened. And I swear to God, I said it. Two guys behind us in line at McDonald's started fighting.
Okay.
And one guy hit the other guy. He smacked his head on the floor and this huge pool of blood started. I go,
oh my God.
Our record is perfect. We've seen a horribly violent incident every single time we've been on 42nd Street.
Jesus Christ, you know, Rob.
Mental. It's just like Taxi Driver. It hadn't changed yet because it was early enough in the 80s.
Yeah,
it was still.
Yeah.
It was just crazy. I loved it, though.
So
I miss
okay.
It.
So all the touring. You haven't made a movie yet. We're kind of in the old days.
You're
making
some
money.
I couldn't even afford to go to the movies.
No,
like,
I know.
Well,
but, you know, Geffen, the deal, the advance, the worst publishing deal. But you're touring nonstop.
By the time I had the world's worst publishing deal, I'd moved to California.
Oh, okay.
Because when I signed to Geffen, I realized that Geffen had this tiny satellite office in New York that was meaningless. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, if we're going to be on that label's radar, we have to move to California.
Oh, good.
Because I had seen so many.
You and your band.
Yeah, me and the band. We had to be in California because I knew if we weren't in Geffen's face constantly, not David Geffen, but the companies, they would forget all about us. And which is exactly what happened. So we all moved into this apartment across the street from Ralph's on Sunset.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. And
four dudes?
No, three guys, one girl.
Oh, okay.
And we would just walk. I would walk down Sunset to Geffen because Geffen had those bungalows on Doheny.
Yes.
And I would just stay there all day long, going from department to department, became friends with people. Because my thought process was, nobody in this building gives a shit if we become rock stars.
Right.
They're doing their job. They want to go home.
Yeah.
But if we become really friendly with everybody
right.
and we're sort of like friends, they'll probably do more for us than if we're just a bunch of douchebags.
I can so relate to that because also, you know, there were spurts in my career where Paramount distributed us back in the day, Vestron Video,
they
were flying high for a while. And I would basically do the same thing, you know. First, I needed money every 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get friendly with the guy who approves the check, the attorney who tells the gal to approve the document. So you're in there kind of, hey, dude, how's it going? And so, yeah, you have to be friendly and ingratiate yourself and be in their face, which is
And there were two other things that I would always do. They had a really nice lunchroom. So I would go in there and steal all the apple juice.
There's that Rob Zombie.
And then I would go into their record closet and take, like, oh, 25 copies of Appetite for Destruction. I'm going right to the used store and sell these. Oh, yeah. No, because that's how I lived, because the $5,000 was going to run out eventually.
3 years, dude. Oh,
but
my God.
Eventually they caught on to all this and things were locked. But it worked great for a long time. I sold more copies of Nirvana records and Guns N' Roses records used stores because, you know.
So how, again, just because I'm not knowledgeable, how would you exactly define your music? Because you're obviously creating and performing music you love, right?
I mean, I would always just say it's like metal.
Metal.
Like if someone, metal, hard rock.
I'm just
curious.
And
that's what I would say. It's in that world. I mean, back then it seemed not really like that so much because it was kind of weird. So we were sort of always bouncing between that world. Like there was grunge rock exploding with Nirvana. We weren't part of that.
Right.
Then there was like heavy metal with Metallica. And we weren't really part of that. We sort of always like ping pong between the two.
That's
interesting.
And the reason why I'm asking this partially is because someone that we both know very well told me that you also like disco music.
I mean,
so cool.
I can explain that easily because growing up as a kid, there was just FM radio. So they'd play ABBA, then they'd play Kiss, then they'd play the Allman Brothers, then they'd play Diana Ross.
Right.
And I just liked everything.
Okay.
I mean, every once in a while, something would come on and be like, that's Margarita.
Well, I promised Bill Mosley I wouldn't tell you who told me about
that. That was
going
to be my guess. But because it was just there. I just liked everything. That's the thing now. Like, I always find, not to complain about people complaining, but, you know, everybody seems so critical now. And when I was a kid, I didn't complain about it. I loved everything.
Yeah.
I'd go, oh my God, the Love Boat's on. Let's watch the Love Boat. Oh, the Monsters, I loved everything. I would go to the movies, and even if I didn't even think like that I didn't like it. I was just so excited to watch any movie.
Oh, that's so cool.
I just liked everything.
I mean,
I like other things more than others.
Yeah. Older. So I was lucky enough. I mean, I saw the Beatles in concert. That music era was just, everything was so uplifting and fun. And I was, there were some things I was not crazy about, but man, whether it was Pink Floyd, who I saw probably every concert they've ever played.
That's awesome.
And, Hendrix I saw in London. I mean, just blessed with having seen these people on stage in small venues too. These weren't huge venues.
That's awesome.
So the Beatles came to Rome and they played in a theater. It was like 2,800 people.
Wow.
You know, it wasn't Shea Stadium or some
madness.
Crazy. So everything to me, because music is by far what I care about the most. I mean, maybe we have some different taste. I don't know, but probably not because he said you
not
like
really.
Everything.
No, everything you just said, I was like,
so the music
for me
was amazing. Then the 70s, it got kind of dark and weird, and suddenly all these up songs because you want to like feel good and you want to hear a romantic sort of ballad and then make out with a chick, all that good vibe, 60s stuff. Then it got kind of dark. So I moved
back.
So
Black Sabbath wasn't working for your makeout sessions?
Black Sabbath, I saw them at the Whiskey back whenever it was, early 70s. And they had, I'm sure you've heard this story. I mean, the Whiskey's a small place.
Yeah.
And they had, floor to ceiling Marshall amps. They had, it was like all the way around,
yeah.
And then they started playing, and I'm used to this because I grew up sort of in that environment. I had to finally go find some shit to put in my ears. Yeah. It was so excruciating.
Yeah, loud. Yeah, I can
believe
that. It
was fucking crazy, out of control loud. But disco, okay. Well, I think that's fun. So Bill Moseley.
Yeah, I didn't dress like – I mean, I was a little kid. It just was like songs I liked, you know. I liked watching – when the Captain and Tennille had a TV show, I watched that too. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just liked everything.
That is cool.
I was not critical about stuff. I lived in such a boring town that anything that was on television was amazing.
Was amazing. Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter what it was. It was Match Game, 74. I was like, oh, it's the greatest show ever.
So today, when I know you're on a roll and we're busy, but when you have a moment to chill at home, wherever that is, what do you listen to? What are you listening to? Or is it also eclectic, depending on your mood?
It's always eclectic. I'll just get into something out of nowhere. Like the first concert I ever saw was Tiny Tim.
No way.
Yeah.
What a bizarre experience.
And I was really little because it didn't really make quite sense. He came to where I lived, which was like Haverhill, Massachusetts, right. And he was playing like probably like a VFW hall. Mm-hmm. And my parents knew him probably from like Laughing or something. And we went. And that was like something like I'd go like, oh, you know, Tiny Tim, and I started getting his records. I was like, these records are great. Like, I'll just be something like, you know, I'll hear a band like Mungo Jerry. I go, that one song's great. I wonder if the other song's great. Right. Then I'll just go deep. But it's like, problem is you can't find anything anymore because, you know, streaming services are trying to break it down. So like, oh, it's the best of Mungo Jerry. But luckily when I was in Norway, I was in some used records. So I was like, the Mungo Jerry records.
That's hilarious.
And they're all great. You know, so it's just, that's what I'll listen to. I'll just get on a trip with something, you know.
Wow. So
go deep.
No, it's great. I'm there. Since I conjure up all these ideas and make these weird movies, my dad used to listen to classical music and I love sitting with him and just for a half an hour we just sit there and drift away and think about stuff. So I'm sort of in that mode, but I'll listen to, you know, just music that takes me on a journey, like Floyd. I mean, Floyd does that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll go through phases. Like I was in this Buck Owens phase for a while. That just went on, you know, and I got to see him towards the end. He was so great. He was so angry on stage at his band. It just like something was feeding back, and he was like, was
you
mad.
See,
it was on
you
a wireless.
Did you see Elvis in live?
No, I never did.
I feel bad. You know, I've been lucky to have seen so many people. And I used to go to Vegas a lot for a while. I thought I was going to be a gambler. Thank God that didn't happen. seriously, really stupid. But it was during that era. I come back from Italy. I was a young guy. It was the early to mid 70s. And, you know, I saw a lot of good people. I saw Johnny Carson, and I saw, like, Don Rickles. And Elvis was always there. I thought, fuck it, one day I'll see Elvis. I want to see him, but he's not going anywhere. And then suddenly he was gone, dead.
Yeah, no, I never did get to Elvis. See him. I wish. That'd be cool. Because even now, it's kind of like we talk about, when you go, oh, fat Elvis, you go, man, kind of looks kind of thin now compared to the rest of the world.
He was like Twiggy.
He feel bad
like
for
a,
him.
He was like, fat Elvis. You're right, actually, because in the movie, which I thought was pretty cool, because Baz Luhrmann is a wonderful filmmaker.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
And I think the kid was really good. And yeah, they made him look kind of like Fat Elvis, and he looked totally fine.
I think that now when I watch The Honeymooners, I go, Ralph Crandom's supposed to be so – Jackie Gleason looks thin.
So for those of you who are maybe a little confused, so – and I did this research. So back in the 1800s, because, again, I'm a magic poster collector. I love all this shit. But these weird carny acts that would travel all over the country, all over Europe. So the fat lady, I shouldn't go back to this fat thing, but it's fascinating. The fat lady.
You're going to get canceled for fat shaming on our show, by the way.
They really can't cancel me. I've been nice my whole life. I'm making these weird movies, you know. But anyway, the fat ladies in those, not the zoo, in these carny acts. Sorry. No. 300 to 350 pounds. Terrible. That was actually what they weighed.
Yeah.
I say no more because that's the end of my story. Yeah. But that was actually back then the fat person or the fat guy. It was usually a lady.
Well, I mean, actually, probably. I mean, it'd be pretty hard to get that big back then because now food is such
garbage.
That you could just go to McDonald's on a regular basis and you'll get
that
weight.
Well, we know that, and it's really
– it's just crazy.
The sad part about the food thing is that a lot of people just can't afford to buy the healthier food, you know. I mean, they're in these – what do they call food deserts? You know, where they just don't have access to stuff.
Well, yeah,
and
all the crap food is subsidized by the government, so that's why a Big Mac is still the same price it was 40 years ago,
that's
but
true.
An apple's $4.
Well, that's true, or more at Whole Foods. You know, all right, so now we got to get back to this amazing conversation
I'll rant forever.
Yeah, me too, actually, because again, I people say stop talking about Italy, but I can't. I grew up there, So the Mediterranean diet, I still feel, is the best diet you can have. It's not only, well, first you have to get those ingredients. You know, it's all about, you know, it's not a, complicated cuisine. Italian food is not saucy and spicy. It's very, but it all depends on the quality of the ingredients, you know. And there's also a sequence in which you can eat food that's really important. You know, you don't start with dessert and end with a steak, you know. So that's a whole other conversation. But I'm not sure why I'm even mentioning Italian.
I don't know. Good food is different, man. I remember when I first time I ate a good strawberry, I was like, holy shit.
Exactly.
I've been eating like the ones all my whole life. I couldn't tell a strawberry from a tomato. No flavor. Then you eat a real one, you're like, whoa.
So true.
I wonder if people like strawberries.
We could go off on a food thing. Maybe we go back to
tuned out. Like, why are they talking about food?
No, it's all right. We can do this. Hey, this could be a two-parter. Which is awesome. So, okay, now you're a music guy, and you're living that incredible lifestyle. And you're unique also because you're not like freaking out and doing drugs and all the incredible lifestyle,
entrapments of living in a van, driving around, still broke.
Right. Well, I mean, incredible.
But it was fun.
Listen, you were doing what you love to do. You were getting through.
That
and
was
you
the
were,
thing.
I mean, that's rare.
I hated having a normal job.
Right.
And I was like, I am not doing this for the rest of my life. I don't care.
Right.
I'd rather be broke than
got it.
Have this moron who's my boss yelling at me.
Right. I agree, totally.
Some stupid
and I'm
shit.
In the same boat. Now, somehow, how did that go into the Devil's Rejects? What was the crazy transition? Because that's how I know you. I mean, I know you're a rock and roll star guy, but I only know you from your movies because I
right. It's weird because it's a little bit confusing even to me because I don't remember it that well. I started directing music videos. I directed a lot of music videos for myself and for other people, Ozzy and different people. So that became sort of a training ground for film work. So when I did my first film, which was House of 1,000 Corpses, I did that in 2000 for Universal Studios. And I'm never 100% sure on the facts of how that happened. I remember I had lunch with Guy Oseri, who manages Madonna and was managing U2. I don't know if he still does. But anyway, he wasn't at that time, but he was still a big player. He had Maverick Records. He's like, oh, what do you want to do? And he got me into Universal, and I had a meeting with Kevin Mischer. And he was like, oh, and I just pitched him this half-ass idea that was not even an idea. It was basically a title.
Devil's Rejects.
Yeah, no, this was House of 1,000 Corpses.
Oh, I'm sorry.
First.
Right.
Yeah, I pitched him that, and it's just sort of...
Which is a great title.
Yeah, I thought the title works. And I was just bullshitting some story around it, and I kind of did. And they're like, okay. And it just sort of... I was like, can this be this easy?
Wow.
And it sort of...
It isn't. You just
no, it isn't.
To be
but it sort of just happened
blessed.
In a way. I think because like the budget for Universal was so low, even though it was... a budget I wish I had today.
Sure.
We almost weren't on the radar, even though we were shooting on the back lot, which who can afford to do that anymore?
That's great.
And
I didn't even know that, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I used the house that was the best little whorehouse in Texas as the main house in that movie.
I did not.
Shot
know
on the Colonial Street, all around there.
Wow.
And and that's how the first movie got made. Then it's also got dropped by Universal and took 3 years to come out and eventually came out of Lionsgate because when Universal actually saw the movie, they're like, I don't think so. We are not putting this out. But it was like, you know, that if you think about the 2000s, in general, horror was at a real low point.
It was.
It was thought as like not something you do. It certainly wasn't thought of as like, oh, you get A-level actors and we put it on 4,000 screens. It was kind of like, eh.
Right.
So there was no support. I mean, Universal wasn't really into doing horror at that point. They were doing like those Flintstones movies and
right,
things
right.
like that.
Yeah, it was not a good period.
No, it wasn't.
Period,
it's hard,
even
yeah,
for
no.
movies.
So then after bouncing around and everybody not wanting the movie, eventually it landed at Lionsgate and came out 2003.
Oh, wow.
And that's and it did well for them. So that's then they funded Devil's Rejects, which was 2005.
And are you still touring during this period or did you slow down the...
No, I mean, I was touring a lot during that period because the 3 years where the movie was sit on a shelf... I was touring.
I see.
I slowed down touring around the time of Devil's Rejects.
Okay.
And then a couple of years later, picked it back up again.
That's so cool.
Because I was trying to like make a movie, then tour. But what was happening was like whenever I'd devote my time to one thing, the other thing would suffer.
Right.
So I just,
for sure.
was like, I got to do both at the same time constantly.
Plus, unlike most of my movies where we shoot them really quickly, I mean, you've got a real shooting schedule. I mean, it wasn't like a weekend, you know, you got like 6 weeks or whatever.
Well, let's see. Devil's Rejects was 30 days.
Right. Yeah.
That was, and you know, so that was.
That's a terrific movie. I didn't know what to expect. I went with one of my sons. I just thought, fuck, this is really kind of gross in a way.
Devil's Rejects is the best time I ever had making a movie.
Really?
You ever have that? You have the best time, and it's like you spend the rest of your life trying to recapture that moment, and it never happens.
Well, it has to do with so many.
I've chasing the dragon.
The movie we're about to shoot is my number 366. So
you've had more shots at having that good time.
But there's only a couple that I remember. Yeah. I mean, the one I always talk about is the first Trancers movie. It was Helen Hunt's first film, and Tim Thomerson.
Yeah.
It was a well-crafted future cop sort of film, and I loved the experience. First, the movie I'm proud of. For a small movie, it turned out really well. But just being on set, Thomerson was originally a stand-up comedian. Yeah. I'm not sure if you know Tim Thomerson's work. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic, and it was Helen's first movie, and it was just kind of golden. You know, we were laughing on set. It was one of those moments you think,
yeah, sometimes God, it just really clicks.
It does click. Well, on that note, we've run out of time, so let's pause it here and save the rest of this awesome chat for next week. Don't miss the thrilling conclusion of our Rob Zombie interview. Same time, same place, right here on The Freak Show. Remember to follow The Freak Show for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from. And be sure to watch our video version of the show on Full Moon Features and Full Moon's Amazon Prime channel. See you dudes next time.